Process to order, please. Welcome all who are here this morning. Glad to have you with us. We are intending to have a discussion and possible recommendations for changes to the state budget process statutes. We're focusing on Chapter 291. Aaron has been kind enough to give us a appendix with the various sections of 291 for consideration, and unless there is objection, we'll just immediately get into that work and start going through appendix by appendix, or appendi by appendi, however you say that, and see what the task force opinions are on the recommendations to change. So with that, we will start. I will open a work session on the ORS 291 definitions and potential changes, beginning with Appendix 1.
Mr. Aaron? Chairman?
Yes.
I don't know if you've had a discussion yet with Aaron, but I had a discussion with her not too long ago, actually 20 minutes ago. And I guess the intent today, this is all on 291.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
The intent is this is a first run through on 291, and that there'll be some of the areas we'll be able to sign off on, but there will be some areas that we will come back to in September. And those will depend upon, obviously, what needs to be drafted, but also depend upon if there's disagreement. So.
Very good.
I would just say, Mr. Co-Chair, is that what you'll find in the spreadsheet is a variety of some nomenclature changes, some language changes to reflect modern processes. There were several sections identified through the work of Mr. Rocco and Mr. Naughton that need to be really reworked by council, and those are the sections that we hope to bring back in September. We did want to just make sure you were aware of those sections, and those two gentlemen can certainly explain some of the issues around them and why they need to be changed. So if you would like just to go through one by one, and you will see there's about 30 different changes here. Some are very straightforward, and some will require some discussion. And we can just start at the top.
Very good. Take it away.
The first change on the spreadsheet you'll see is two changes that will apply, or we recommend that they apply to the full section, and they're definitional changes. So we didn't call out each time those phrases are used throughout the section. It would just be throughout the whole chapter. And one is the reference to budget report and or plan. Modernly, we use budget report as a document produced by LFO as part of budget analysis of bills. The recommended changes was to change it to governor's budget, and that would be throughout the entire chapter of 291. The other issue was the definition of tentative budget. And there needs to be a distinction of what tentative budget is used as and what that means. And so those would be two changes that would apply throughout the whole section and the whole chapter. The second changes were in the definition section. One was to amend 291.002 sub 1, classification of expenditures, and apply it to a definition used later in the chapter in 291.216. And then the other part within the definitions was to add, delete reference to State Board of Higher Education, as we have now moved to the independent boards.
Mr. Kutcher, would you like us to take this step by step? What is your preference on this? Yeah. She wants is there a question or recommendation?
I think we might have the most clarity if we actually took it step by step. Because then,
because there's a lot to
there's
lot
a lot to,
go. To
get through, so that we know that what we've actually accomplished today and what we'll have to come back to. But we could. That doesn't mean it's going to take forever for each one. It just means that. So we can see if we have any issues.
Are there questions on these first two items that Aaron's gone over?
Thank you, Chair. Where are the cost of temporary services accounted in our budget?
Cost of temporary services. Mr. Rocco, can you answer that question?
Temporary services are included in the personal services category within the budget, and it's there's a separate line in the budget detail that identifies temporary services.
Okay.
So with the first on the spreadsheet here, the changing the budget plan report to the governor's budget, and the need to define a tentative budget, is there concern or objection? Seeing none, we'll move forward on that one. With the second, the definitions, to amend the first definition of classification of expenditures, is there any concern? Seeing none, deleting the State Board of Higher Education makes sense to everyone. Very good.
Mr. Chair, on the revolving fund, is the purpose there to continue the revolving fund under the new authority, or to is the revolving fund appears to be created simply for the State Board of Higher Education? Are there other places where the revolving funds are used?
There are other situations where revolving funds are used. I don't know if any of you three gentlemen want to take a shot at responding to that.
I think there are other uses of revolving fund, and we just thought that the specific reference to this Board of Higher Ed was just not necessary, but we do need a definition of revolving funds.
Erin, want to keep on rolling?
The next one was 291030 as definition of agency. We recommend no changes on that section. We then moved to 291100. And there was a recommendation that we amend the sub 3 and sub 4 in the reporting requirements, and it was recommended that we delete that whole section 3 and 4.
And just to clarify, all of you and Mr. Jordan have had the chance to go over this, and this is a recommendation from across the board. All right.
I should have prefaced our conversation to say that this is something that I worked with Mr. Rocco, Mr. Naughton, and two other members of both Ken's staff and George's staff to provide these recommendations for you. So there will still be some discussion, and certainly you discuss any specifics going forward, but that is a joint recommendation spreadsheet.
I guess, Mr. Chair, that my question on that would be if the if DAS is no longer going to report to the legislature on agencies that aren't complying with its rules, then how is the legislature going to know that the agencies aren't complying with the rules?
So part of the reason the statute was set up was when we first rolled in the statewide accounting system. And so that's what this language is all designed to do, is the agencies that weren't in compliance with the statewide accounting system, we would come back and report when we did this back in 1993. All the agencies now are, and we require them on an ongoing basis to keep that up. So when we looked at this, we thought that this is not necessary anymore because we now gotten everyone into compliance, and there hasn't been any reporting since we actually did that. So I don't know of any situation, Ken, maybe you have heard anything, where we have any agencies that aren't complying with, state agencies aren't complying with our accounting rules, and I think they are. So it's a redundancy question more than anything else.
Any other concerns or objections to that recommendation?
Just a slight question on that. What happens in a future tense if an agency digresses from?
We go after them.
You go after them?
Yes, big time.
Based on
the legislative fiscal office duties and responsibilities.
But not on statute, so you just...
I think there are ways that we can still make force compliance with the rules. And like George said, this was, I think, was initially put in just to make sure people used our systems, and now everyone does use our systems. And
okay, thank you, Ken.
Thank you. All right, then. State that one is an accepted recommendation, 291-100.
Is that where we are now?
Yes,
okay,
yes, sir. On 291-110, achieving benchmarks, what we have recommended is just the replacement of benchmarks with the term performance measures, as it reflects current nomenclature in this process. And so you will see throughout that chapter, we have just gone through and done a line item for benchmarks and replaced it with performance measures. Under 291-200 budget policy, we recommended no action. Akin to in the last meeting, we had a similar budget policy for the legislature. We made no changes to that one as well. So it does simply state the executive budget process, which is distinct from the legislative budget process. 291-202 budget and tax expenditure reports. We recommended no action in that section.
Okay, we'll hold you just a second. For 291-110, is there any concern with replacing benchmarks with performance measures?
Be a welcome change.
All right. Representative Jensen says go.
Mr. Chair, is it beyond the scope of this committee to recommend that the established performance audits?
To establish performance audits? Do we have performance audits in statute?
I believe there are some references to performance audits. We'd have to look around and find exactly where, but I know the Secretary of State believes they have the authority to do performance audits. Sometimes we argue with that. But.
Senator, do you want to bring to the September meeting any kind of proposal on inclusion of language surrounding performance audits?
I can do that.
And I think there is some language along that's associated with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee also that we may want to look at. I don't know if that's within. You probably need another task force, Senator, to do that. But there is a section of law that talks about what the responsibilities of the Joint Audit Committee are. So, and I think it does include something about performance.
Would you be kind enough to email me and just
more than
point me to
been
that?
Done in recent years.
Would you be kind enough to email me and just point me to that?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Senator.
I said it includes more than has been done in recent years. And
quite a bit more, actually. Yes.
Yeah.
So I should warn the speaker about that. What you're saying, Senator.
Maybe you should warn the Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good. Very good. So we're okay in 291-110. Aaron went through the no action recommendations on the next sections and on the tax expenditure report by the. Have we reached that one yet?
That we are on 203, sir.
And I have Representative Jensen.
Just a point of clarification with the opening comments we read about. Legislative Council, et cetera. Is this an illustration of the thing? Is item H, small h, under 203 here an illustration of a correction that the LC would be being responsible for and that we don't have to mess with? There are several items of somewhat of this nature. Here, H is reclassified as F since you're deleting E and F.
Representative Jensen, the council, once we submit this discussion to council, they would fix all those things.
I assume that would be the place, but I did, or the case, but I do, because I've made a number of comments like that. But,
it's good to have the clarification. I just have a question on it because I remember in the notes on this, it said that it's not possible to do the analysis. Can get a little more information about this? Because I know that the tax expenditure report is something that does get a lot of attention every couple of years.
And I would just say that was a question that I think we all had, and we would like to just, we were hoping that Paul would have some feedback for that as well.
I do, Mr. Chair. Sub F there is a goal, and it is something that's discussed widely in the Revenue Committee, and it is part of the statute for the tax expenditure report. We haven't seen really substantive development of that. It involves really analyzing programs from the expenditure side in comparison with the tax side. And while we've got that in the statute, we haven't done that in a formal way in that report. It's something that I think, speaking for the Revenue Committee, is very significant, particularly when you're viewing tax credit sunsets. Mm-hmm. The question comes up, is it more efficient to just appropriate the dollars rather than run this through the tax system?
Right.
So that issue is still very much alive. Now, In this context, that I don't think it would cause a change in practice to eliminate it. I do, however, think that sub G would be a significant substantive change to the process we have now. The agencies are asked to evaluate each tax expenditure. The way the department has managed it, they go through and they exclude a certain number of cases. One is the federal connection. Let's say for the federal connection, they don't do the evaluation. There's a de minimis amount. If it's less than $100,000, they don't do it. If there's some federal law preventing us from, as a state, from taxing something, then it's not evaluated. So they've done some practical steps to exclude things, and perhaps that should be looked at as a, to reword this. But there are a fairly large number of cases where the agencies do put time in the evaluation, and they do produce, you know, look at for example, how the tax credit or tax expenditure is distributed by income group. You know, Business Oregon will go through. They've got evidence in terms of enterprise zones. What is the job impact? And while you can always debate the methodology, that effort is made in a number of areas. So, and that's very important information. One of the things that we have recommended for the policy committees is we go through to the tax credit sunset process. They'll call us and say, well, how do we begin to evaluate this? Well, the first thing we tell them is, if it's been evaluated by an agency, bring them in to testify. So we do use that substantially. And in fact, we've been asked really to do more of this on the legislative side. But still, I think this would continue to be, in its current form, an important first step. Maybe we need to change this language in a way that might define more clearly what should be evaluated or what's practically can be evaluated versus what would be a waste of resources. For example, if we asked the Department of Revenue to evaluate something that was against federal law, that seems like that wouldn't be a useful way to spend time or resources. So that was my thinking on it. I did talk with Revenue Research this morning as well about it, and they've, you know, I think in many cases it is a significant part of the process.
So given that response, is there a comfort for...
Absolutely. My notes say that we wanted to talk to Paul about this, yep. Because George and I met, and we, you know, we don't care about revenue except having a lot of it. You know? And so we wanted to check with Paul on some of these revenue issues, and we just ran out of time.
I suggest we members are at the table this one, give them more time to talk this one over, and maybe come back with how that could possibly be rewritten.
I think it would be a good idea, because I know of, depending on how we rewrite this, this might become a hot button.
Yep.
And the discussion of what's supposed to be a relatively mundane piece of legislation.
And if I could add as well, part of the issues here is the subjective nature of this. What's the most fiscally effective? Has it successfully achieved the purpose? Those are things that are decisions the legislature has to make about it. If we could work and figure out what is it that's being reported, I think we can definitely do that piece of it. But trying to get the agencies having to make that what's really a legislative call.
Gotcha. But don't put benchmarks in. Don't put benchmarks in. Okay, leave benchmarks out. All right, very good then. Moving on.
And then our next section, 291-204. The two recommendations we have in that particular section were simply modernizing the language, reference to instruction, and replace reference to budget estimates or request for appropriation with agency request budget. We simply wanted to modernize the language that's used when submitting the budget.
Very good.
And similarly, in 291-208, replace reference to budget form, budget estimates with agency request budget. And so you'll see that change reflected in that section as well.
Let me just hold you there. 204, 206, 208, any questions or concerns, members? Representative Jensen?
Are we suggesting that existing state forms are not self-explanatory?
I believe that is the suggestion.
Okay. All right. All I know is we have to give them instructions that are about that thick to the agencies so that they can fill out the forms.
Absolutely.
Very good. All right, Aaron, that sounds like we're okay with those.
And then 291 to 10, we have a recommendation to repeal the requirement for preparation of tentative tax expenditure report. I'm not sure. Yeah,
there we go. This
that
ties
was again
in.
A question.
Exactly.
I think we wanted to confirm.
Mr. Chair, on the tax expenditure report now, we don't actually have a tentative one. That's a working document. We do work closely with Department of Revenue in reviewing the tax expenditure report, which we'll be doing the next couple months before it comes out. So, but it's not a tentative as the same way you use that term for the budget.
So this doesn't affect the actual development of the tax expenditure report. It's just something, the tentative report is something that is not created.
So that was a preliminary step that actually doesn't exist.
Correct. Yes.
All right. I think we're all good with that. Moving on.
291 to 12, revising budget plan. There was a recommendation to repeal that entire section right there as it relates to transmitting of budget forms, transmitting of tentative budget report to governor.
Questions?
It would all be normally administrative actions.
Correct.
Yes. The governor, if I don't give the governor the information, he will let me know directly, independent of the statute.
He doesn't need a statute. Okay. All right.
And that is a similar issue with 291-214, which is the governor to examine budget forms and revise tentative budget or tax expenditure report.
All right.
I would say 291-216 is a, you'll see multiple recommendations within that section. That is a kind of the heart of some of the work that was looked at during this review of the chapter. Starting with just a general application to the entire chapter, which is add within 291-216, direct the preparation of estimates for, and should say, cost of continuing current programs into next biennium to align with the current service level budgeting process. Then we have the number one is 291-216 sub one, repeal the date for preparing and printing the budget.
I guess the date is currently December. No, it's
well, this was an artifact of when you had to send things to get them typeset, and now we do it all electronically, so the information is available, but it's not November 10th anymore. Right. You don't have to send it to the printer anymore.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
I have Senator Whitsitt.
Yes, on Appendix 12, if we're not going to have a date when the budget report must be compiled, I mean, if we take the November 10th out of it, what is that replaced with? Is there some other date that is more appropriate?
Mr. Chair, Senator, which it usually we have stuff to the printer by just before Thanksgiving, but it floats depending on when. How long the print staff actually need. As they've gotten better, as Mr. Rocco said, with how quickly they can turn things around, that window shortens, which means the governor has more time from the date that the election occurs to actually make decisions before he's got to put the budget in. Our ultimate goal is that we have to, our ultimate statutory requirement is the governor has to release the budget by December 1st. This is purely, as Mr. Rocco said, requiring us when we have to send it to the printer, which now with modern technology and being able to electronically transfer files, we would prefer to not have a date certain when we have to send it to the printer, because in our perspective, we should be able to maximize the amount of time the governor has to make a decision, depending on how much we can shorten that print time.
So this does not change the date when the governor's budget is due?
The governor's budget still is when you see it. This is purely an internal when we're supposed to send it to the printer, and we've been shortening that all the time.
So for a governor that's not turning over, December 1 is still the date where they have to give you guys the budget.
Yeah.
A budget.
And if we elected a Harry Reid for governor, then what?
If there's a turnover, then it's February 1.
Yep.
In other words, there is a date certain that the budget has to be prepared on February 1.
Yes, right. For a new incoming governor, yes.
Right.
Commissioner Reed's intentions?
No, I was just using that as a club to suggest that if the governor didn't wish to create a budget, he might not have to. But you said that February, this elsewhere, it's February 1st.
Yes.
Okay.
If the governor chose not to create a budget, the legislature would still have the authority, obviously, to create one.
Right.
Yes.
The responsibility. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about the relative merits of the governor's budget, we can do that.
It's still early. It's still early. Representative Jensen.
Thank you. It takes care of part of my concern on this. But I have a concern or question about the alternative budget plan. What are we referring to there?
Is that in 12, or where is the alternative budget?
Yeah, 216. Okay. Alternative budget plan in the heading there to begin with.
Gotcha.
291, 216, governors, et cetera.
I think this is a reference to the where you have to provide. Is this the 10% reduction
yes.
options? It's the 10% less budget in case you don't have. That's what is referred to as the alternative budget.
Dollars aren't there. It's his,
right. Yeah.
It's first cut budget.
Yes.
Which is 10%.
Yes. By statute in here, somewhere it says 10% less budget.
All right, good.
So every year when we send out the budget instructions that Ken referred to, they're this thick. One of the requirements is that every agency has to turn in a 10% reduction list, and it's tied to the statute.
Yeah.
Really to give us options and you all options as to how we balance. So.
That's fine. I just wanted to make sure I knew, you know. And I didn't understand.
And Representative Jensen, that's in subsection 13 of this section of 291, 216. It's subsection 13 that talks about that.
The comment there needs to be reworked. Do you plan to?
Yes, I think that's one of the areas where we want to sit down with council and talk about just cleaning up the language a little bit. But the purpose will still remain when we're done with it. It's just we wanted to look at the language, and we didn't have time to do some wordsmithing on it.
And can that be done for this September meeting?
Hopefully, yes. Yeah.
Good luck.
Depending on how many other things. You are welcome to take a shot at
can
it.
Can I really? Thank you. Very good. Any other questions on that section?
Chair.
Senator.
Under sub 5. It's bothered me greatly that the state does not include their loan, or at least to my knowledge, the state does not include their loan guarantees as an obligation. And if you look at the guarantees of the pension obligation bonds and K-12 construction bonds, we're somewhere in the ballpark of $7.1 billion of guarantees just in those two areas that we don't have on our balance sheet. If my banker allowed me to do that, I would go to jail. I mean, really, it's something I think should be part of our statement.
Yeah, I need to take a look at that. I'm not familiar enough with how we do the guarantees and how we report them. I definitely know that when we talk with our bond rating agencies, for example, they definitely are looking at how much we have in guarantees out there as well. So it's a real issue. I just don't remember off the top of my head, maybe you do, what we require in that disclosure.
The pension obligation bonds and the guarantees that we are given to bonds that schools have produced are both in the annual report for the state, the debt policy annual report that the treasurer puts out. I do believe, however, the obligations under the pension obligation bonds do show up in the budget, and they do show up on the capital side also. I mean, in the sense that obviously it's debt service that has to be paid, but it does show. But in terms of our potential theoretical liability if a school district was to default, it doesn't show up in the budget process. It just shows up in the state, in the treasurer's report.
Do the pension obligation bonds that have been sold by school districts and other entities that are guaranteed by the state, do they show up?
I don't actually think they're guaranteed by the state.
I may have misread that, but I had it.
But
And I believe they would show up in the school district's budget, but they're not a state concern. So. The state pension obligation bonds are another line in the personal services category.
Well, this guarantee is an issue that Laura Lockwood McCall and I have gone around to several times with. I mean, if I co-sign a note for my kid to buy a house, I'm stuck with the house, and so is the state.
Well, if you want to just have a side here. Our option, although no school district has ever defaulted, is we could do the politically easy thing of withholding state school funds from it.
The politically easy thing. that is.
Since this is being recorded, I better say that's sarcastic.
Yes. Erin?
Mr. Co-Chair, still within 291216, we are looking at number two, which in 291216 sub 7 makes reference to tentative budget. We recommend that is consolidated with 291210, which also has to deal with recommended budget report, not removing it, just consolidating it with similar statutes. 291216 8 sub B, we recommend just an update in the language. As you will see, there is some suggested new language in which we remove the report shall show actual expenditure to date and replace it with the report shall show actual expenditures for the prior biennium and estimated expenditures for current biennium. So just updating the language in that. The next recommendation within this chapter is 291216 8 sub C. That is one of those sections that we identified as needing to be simply reworked. We didn't, again, it follows, we would like to sit down and basically rewrite that subsection there.
All right.
A, B, C, D. So we would hope to bring back recommendations in September for that particular reference. And then sub 9, we recommend simply inserting full-time equivalency into sub A, the total number of positions included in the budget. We will insert of full-time equivalency positions included in the budget to modernize and reflect current process. And then 13, 291216, 13, again, we've already mentioned the alternative budget and not wanting to remove that section, but needing to rework it substantially, and again, that would be a recommendation we would bring back to you in September.
Great. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The issue of the full-time equivalency positions, I understand, having that in there, but just positions, I guess I would be more comfortable with language that was and the total number of full-time, total number of FTE and positions. And the reason for that is you got 247 FTE and 308 positions, sometimes in a agency budget type of thing.
I think that's a good suggestion, and that's typically how we do it anyways. We usually list positions and then their FTE. So I
like that because, sometimes as a legislator, I would get, kickback from, the community about the mushrooming of the agency. And in fact, the FTE has remained relatively constant. Mm-hmm. But there's been some change with part-time positions and sort of things that have added positions. So thank you, Rock.
I think it might also lead, I know it's current practice, that it's best probably to continue current practice because of doing it just by just FTE might not give enough information to a person that was looking at the budget to understand that. Give a couple examples that ODFW, the Department of Forestry, there are a couple of other agencies that have a significant number of seasonal part-time positions. So if you just saw what the FTE equivalency was, it wouldn't give you the an idea about the magnitude of the operations that they have, because some of those positions might only be for a few months.
Yes.
Senator?
Under sub 8 AA, personal expenses including compensation benefits for state employees, but excluding cost of services contracted out and temporary service costs. That is a language that is consistent, I find, throughout, and I'm still wondering, Mr. Rocco, where is the temporary services accounted for? Because apparently it's not in personal expenses, because that says excluding. And that gets back to what Senator Devlin was saying, that there have a we do have certain agencies that have a lot of time and a lot of people in the summertime or seasonally that are temporary.
So let me take a crack at that while Ken's looking at this language. We might want to change around a little bit. The part where it says excluding costs of services contracted out, that actually counts as what we call service supplies. It shows up as what we call professional services. So that shows up under number B, and there's redundant language there. So that's the contracted out side. But Ken's right. What's listed there is temporary services. We do count as personal services. We have a account that actually lines that out. So we may need to clean up this language and leave temporary services, including temporary services under personal services, and just put out the part that says cost of services contracted out, because that's what we really do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
And then under C, this whole rewording here, I certainly agree that needs to be reworded. I would certainly like to see the amount of merit increases expanded to including the cost of PEB increases, PERS increases, COLAs, reclassifications, and so forth. And, of course, paid leave should be included as well.
They're taking notes, Senator, so I think it's so noted. Anything further?
Oh, and Mr. Chair, under 9C, the number of permanent full-time equivalent vacancies excluding academics, I believe that we have excluded academics from the all academics now from the state.
Yeah, good catch. So that's redundant. Anything else on this section? Very good. Erin?
Okay, moving on to 291217, we recommend remove reference in sub 2 to preparing tentative budget plan and tax expenditure report. And then 291222, sub 4, sub A, is another one of those small sections that needs to be revised to clarify timing when revised governor-elect budget should be submitted. So that is is as well another section we would like to bring back with some clarifying language in September. So we have no recommendations on that one for you today. Moving on to 291223, again, we have a change reference to in the statute, which is the agency budget estimates to governor's budget estimates. So you'd see that changed throughout that section, as well as remove requirement to utilize budget forms. It goes back to a similar section with the budget forms and instructions, so we would just like to align that process as well. Do you want to?
Anybody, questions, comments, concerns?
All these are going to come back with draft language. Soon.
All right.
Am I assuming that comes back in September? Needs to be reworked?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, on Appendix 15, 291223-2, sub 2, what is the... what is the purpose of the confidentiality?
The purpose is so that the So Paul's people and my staff can get started on analyzing what's in the governor's budget, but not tell anybody before the governor actually releases it to the public, because we wouldn't want to like have a press conference 3 days before the governor planned and talk about his or her budget before the governor was ready to do it. But it gives us a head start on figuring out what's in the budget. And actually, this is sort of misleading anyways, because, you know, we work together really closely, and so we know even before November 10th, I think we usually have information before then even, but we are sworn to secrecy. And this prevents us from giving it to media or other people if they know we have it, and we can point to this and say we can't give it up.
That's actually worked very well over the years, is that so you and the legislature, your staff, aren't blindsided when the governor releases his budget.
Right.
We share the key components so they can advise you when it comes out, okay, this is what they're really doing behind the scenes. So it's worked out, I believe, fairly well.
My understanding is you're not producing the same type of governor's budget that you were producing, that was produced the last time.
We're going to be changing the budget around, correct, Mr. Co-Chair. We have gotten some of the messages loud and clear about how you would like to consume information, so we're going to try and make that a little bit more accessible for all of you.
Thank you very much. Further comments, questions on this section? Next.
Mr. Co-Chair, the next two sections, 291226 and 291228, we are both recommending for possible repeal. And 291226, reference to budget item to replace lost and unrecovered public funds or property. It doesn't align with current modern budget process. And then the second section, 291228, possible repeal needs to be reviewed to determine if it's a duplication of the QEM report.
Okay. Questions on that or concerns on that?
It might be good, if just saying in advance here, if all of this leads to a bill, that staff reports in the future on the bill clearly point out that this is repeal of a duplication, if that
correct
proves to be the case, because otherwise we're going to get people in the building thinking differently, that we're somehow taking away that requirement.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Appendix 16, if the failure to cover loss of public funds is not reported, then how do we find out about it? I mean, what if you have... is this a redundancy thing, or are we simply taking the transparency out of it?
I think this is, and again, we would want to check with counsel on this, but I believe this is just, there's still statutory language that requires the recovery of lost public funds. This is just talking about the reporting of that in the governor's budget. And I have never seen anything like that in the governor's budget that reports on how public funds are going to be recovered. There's still a requirement, though, that they have to be recovered, or there's a penalty if you don't recover them.
Very good. Moving on.
All right. The next section is 291258, and this is one where I actually would like to add some language to require the department notify the legislative fiscal office of establishment of new personnel positions or classifications. So that is not the formal wording, but that would be the intent of the addition to that statute. And then in...
There's no problem with that. There's no objection from the legislature on that.
I would have just one comment on Appendix 18. I think also it should be reported how it would be anticipated that the position would be funded.
70% position classification and how the position will be funded. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Right.
That's usually in the letters that they send in to us. Usually.
Yeah. Okay.
Very good.
Next section is 291260. Change would be and to delete reference to August 2nd, 1951, as it relates to purposes for which state was legally committed on August 2nd, 1951. So first delete that reference, and the second would be to rewrite essentially the first section as it says currently every state agency when making requests or preparing budgets to be submitted to the federal government for funds, equipment, materials, or services other than for highway purposes and purposes which state was legally committed on August 2nd, 1951 shall upon completion of such request or budget first submit to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to be rewritten in the following language or similar to the following language upon consultation with council. Upon the Department of Administrative Services request, every state agency shall submit their federal funding request to the department when making requests or preparing budgets to be submitted to the federal government for funds, equipment, materials, or services other than for highway purposes. So to keep the intent, modernize the language for which it's written, and then remove reference to August 2nd, 1951.
Questions or concerns? Hearing none. Very good.
And then there would be one addition to and link 291375, which has to do with legislative review of applications for federal finance assistance, submission approval, and exemptions would be to add a connection in this section to that reference later in statute.
Very good.
I think so.
Chair.
Senator.
On the 291-260, I think one of the areas where we don't have enough oversight or don't study the issues far enough on these grants is what is the potential reality of ongoing costs after the grant money runs out? You know, we have a grant that sets up a sub-agency or a program, it's funded with, it hires X many people. After so many years, the grant runs out. What is the potential? Are we going to just simply stop doing that, or is there some ongoing obligation? So it's bothered me that we don't look at that very closely. I don't know how you would.
There's information, whether there's a state match for federal funds, but I'm not sure if it's any,
well,
Mr. Rocco.
We normally, well, not normally, all the time, we ask for three or four things when an agency's submitting a grant application to us under 291-375 and then this linkage to 260. And that would be if it requires any new positions, does it require a state match, and if so, how much and where from? Is it related to the mission and purpose of the agency, and does it require any ongoing maintenance of effort in the future? So we get that information. Now, that doesn't mean that even if an agency says no, it doesn't require maintenance of effort in the future, that it doesn't build up some kind of clientele that then expects that program to continue when the grant funds run out. I mean, that's a different issue. But we do at least get on record that whether the federal government anticipates us to continue the program or not as a condition of accepting the grant money.
I was thinking, without comment on the merits, but of the Common Core, we have that essentially established through the ARRA money in 2009, and most of the funding for that appears to have fallen by the wayside, yet the state is still doing it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's costing.
Is there any way that, Mr. Chairman, is there any way we can, I don't know if it needs to be written in here, but that in the future, if we get a request, you know, for positions or funding, that it's clearly identified that we are, in essence, backfilling a program that was previously grant-funded? I'm trying to think. We have two opposites, actually, in this, in a sense. Well, not opposites, but differences. You'll have the grant that will go to an agency that's just a very competitive grant, and it may or may not create a constituency for whatever service it's delivering. But if it does, it would be good to know once the grant runs out if we're actually, if this request that's coming in is based on something that was previously funded by grants. And then on the other side, particularly for, I think, the one entity that I think of all the time, the Public Health Division of OHA, which is largely funded by federal grants. In fact, some of them don't appear to be very competitive. They just appear to be a sequence of hoops that the state has to go through every year for a multitude of different public health grants. But it's all grant funded, or not all, but we have very little general fund in public health. But it would be good to know that, like, I don't know, who should I pick on? Let's pick on DEQ.
Go ahead.
Okay, DEQ gets a grant. It would be good to know if they come in 2 years later and want a program that they need to move a position from what was being a grant-funded program to being on state funds. And well, I know we've actually experienced some of that because of declining federal funds for those programs.
Well, I think in building the budget, there is a fund shift package that's in the what we call the essential budget level, developing that budget. And it does identify, it will identify if there's a proposal to continue a program that was formerly funded by other funds or federal funds that they now need general fund to fund. And so it is identifiable in the budget.
Further discussion? Moving on.
Mr. Co-Chair, moving on to 291272, just internally within that chapter, we have kind of switched our discussion to allocation of governmental services expenses. And so the first recommended changes would be to add language to clarify source of money for expenditures by LFO for duties related to Ways and Means and the Emergency Board. And you will see some suggested language in 291272(3)(c). And it just says 60% of expenditures incurred by Legislative Fiscal Office out of monies appropriated from the general fund in administration of its duties for Joint Ways and Means and Emergency Board. The next two suggestions are possible repeals pending some additional research by budget management, and it relates to payment of accounting charges from Economic Development Fund and cash account of state agencies for receipts from Economic Development Fund. Question was whether or not these funds are still utilized. I think that was a question that George was going to look into.
And the answer is yes. They use these statutes all the time. All lottery funds get deposited over to Department of Administrative Services in this account and then get sent out to corollary accounts in all the agencies that receive lottery funds. So when I pinged our accounting staff, they went, absolutely need these. Please do not repeal them.
All right,
so that's 285 and 290.
So you're asking to take
leave
those off
alone.
The table.
Yes.
Okay.
You're asking to leave it in?
Leave them in.
Yes.
Yeah.
285.
285 and 290, both of those.
Both of those, okay.
Chair.
Senator.
Can we go back to 291272?
Yeah, you want an explanation on that one?
This appears to ignore the assessments against other funds and federal funds. What's the reason for that?
Actually, this is precisely to get at, this is the central government service charge section, which is another somewhat bizarre creation of the budget structure that allows certain central services, like the governor's costs for the governor's office, some of the costs of council, some of the costs of fiscal office for legislative service, some of the costs of assembly, to be charged to agencies based on their other funds. So it's a way to tap an agency's other funds to say, well, you're also going to pay part of this, the cost for these central services that government provides. We can't do that to federal funds because the federal government doesn't like that. and won't allow us to use their money for you guys. But this is the way we tap other funds.
Okay. Yeah, my note on it just said, what? That was my note on that one. What? No further discussion on that. Then moving on.
The next question before you is 291305. It refers to meeting of administrative expenses in law, and it should say possible, as the question comes up as to whether or not that can or should be repealed, as whether or not it reflects modern administrative expenses.
Further comment on that? So, right, the question is that can be kept in, or so you, it is being suggested to repeal or not? I'm not clear.
We as we had conversations about this, we're suggesting repealing it. The language here, when we looked at it, defines administrative expenses basically as budgeting and accounting. And I will tell you, having now in the chief financial office role, you can debate 100 different meanings of what is administrative costs. What's human resources, general administration of the agency, field administration. You end up in these endless discussions about that. When we looked at the language here, it is defining it very narrowly as just accounting and budgeting, which we didn't think is probably an appropriate definition of administrative expenses. To redefine this would take a whole nother work group unto itself, having walked through some of those issues in, on the exec branch side. We would just recommend, because the language is here is probably too narrow, just repealing this language. And if you have needs for administrative expenses, or Michael Jordan does, we work on those directly as opposed to having it defined in statute here. So, and again, this definition goes back to 1963, and things have changed since then. And so we think this is outdated. It's probably not worth going into and redefining at this stage, because, again, it would take a lot of work and a lot of debates. So that was where the recommendation came from.
So you can't see any kind of significant consequence of not having this language in statute for your reference?
No, and actually when Michael Jordan came in and they did the Hackett study, they focused in on human resources, IT, accounting, and procurement policies. And again, everyone can define administrative expenses a little bit differently. And throughout state agencies, it's defined differently if you look at one agency versus another agency. That usually is a function. Legislative fiscal office, our office, work with a specific agency about how are they defining it, and that's what we build into the budget, depending on the budget structures.
Representative Jensen.
We potentially run into a problem with, in this case, the federal government. If we don't have these services defined in statute, and then an agency uses the money for administrative services that the feds are not looking at it and say, well, you know, you don't indicate anywhere in here statutes that there is, and we don't like it.
I'm not aware of any place where the federal government has looked back at this statute for definition of administrative costs that they accept. Usually federal grants, they will define what are allowable administrative expenses, and then they will direct that to us. They don't look to this statute. They look at their own requirements as to what we will allow. So I don't think the repeal of this statute will have an impact on the federal funds.
But if it is, okay. If it is in statute and they don't accept it, would it add strength to, you know, going back to the feds and asking for an exception or a waiver?
Representative Jensen, based on the language that's here, this language is so narrow.
Yeah, no, I understand.
We wouldn't win that fight.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Yeah.
As you're reworking it, you know, would it help us in an appeal process if we thought something was an administrative cost that the feds hadn't included? That's my own
idea. Yeah, I don't know the answer to it, Representative Jensen.
Because it's Washington printing press gets more and more, you know, overworked. They may start questioning, then depending upon the nature of who's there, et cetera, et cetera.
None?
And I would say, Mr. Co-Chair, that if the decision is made to repeal the definition of administrative offenses, we would also repeal the 291-272 sub 1 administrative expenses has meeting as defined in that later section. So we would delete that line as well if that is the decision going forward.
Can I just do a check? Do committee members have comfort with that proposed repeal? Do you need more information on it? I think we're good to go.
Moving on to the next set of statutes as it relates to the emergency board, 291-328. In that first recommendation, you would see at the bottom there, we have removed requirement to file order of allocation, grant of authorization, or approved budget with requesting agency, and only make it required to be filed with the department and the Secretary of State. The next section there, 291-332, again as it relates to the emergency board, modernizes the composition language as it relates to the emergency board, in that we have deleted where it says "and the election of a chairperson from the member" as an add language, because the presiding officers are the chairpersons of the emergency board. So we would insert that language. In addition, we would insert language as "the members of the emergency board shall be appointed by the presiding officers of the House of Representatives and the Senate." So to reflect in that section how the emergency board comes into existence and who appoints to that board. So that would be Appendix 25. Appendix 26, again, is...
Just checking.
Can I clarify something?
Senator.
It's always been a little curious to me. My memory is kind of failing me this morning. But if I remember correctly, I'm not seeing it here, but I may not. The presiding officers appoint the emergency board, but if my memory is correct, we actually vote on that.
You vote in the chamber. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, you do. So is that reflected in law? Or just reflected in rule?
I think that's a House and Senate rule that is
okay.
Done.
But I'm just wondering if, I mean, it's an open question. You're correcting something here that hasn't been the practice in forever.
Correct.
But if the current practice is that the presiding officers appoint, but then it goes to a vote on the floor, should it be reflected in statute, or should it be just leaving it up to rule? I mean, maybe that's a question for the presiding officers, probably. I've never seen anybody question it, but... Can we check on that?
Yeah, we'll look into that.
Question. Any other comments or concerns on Appendix 25, Representative?
Just a question. I am assuming that if a presiding officer is for some reason or other temporarily unable to function as the chair of the e-board, that this would then go to the pro tem.
Good question.
Again, I think that's a rule, a chamber rule issue.
I think that would be a chamber rule.
And the statute wouldn't preempt the chamber from devising a rule that would.
It's our understanding that chamber rules typically trump statute
because they're constitutionally backed.
It might be something that members coming back next time would want to suggest to the presiding officers, that something go in their rules dealing with this particular statute. Then.
Very good. Try to remember that.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative. Erin?
And looking at our next one, which is, we have two options for you today. It's one of the few that we've presented with multiple options. Again, as it relates to the emergency board, authorized to secure assistance and payment of board expenses. The statute, as written, predates the establishment of the Legislative Fiscal Office. And so two recommendations for you as it relates to the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, upon request of the board, shall furnish necessary assistance to the board. First recommendation would be to delete sub one. Option number two, again in reference to sub one under 291334, would be to replace the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and then delete at the end of that sentence, or the board may employ such assistance as they may deem necessary. So it would read as Legislative Fiscal Office, upon request of the board, shall furnish necessary assistance to the board.
So is there a recommendation from this group as to which option, or is it, do we have two options because you guys couldn't agree?
I think it's just my preference is that DAS not appear in this section. So I would delete that. And it's easy enough to put Legislative Fiscal Office in there or just leave it that the board, you know, takes care of itself. But
this language really was there before Legislative Fiscal Office existed. Now that you have a Legislative Fiscal Office, you don't need to reference to DAS to provide information for you. We're at the table with the agencies representing the governor in those meetings anyway. You can ask us if you have information. So I think we're really trying to just update the language to reflect that you have a staff now who can do the majority of this work for you.
I can go with option two, just so it's clear.
Option two?
Yeah. Option two.
Option two. Agreement on option two.
Mr. Co-Chair, the next recommendation is as it relates to definition of appropriation bill. We have this before you for discussion as possible repeal, as it would be delete the reference to appropriation bill requiring approval of emergency board before project commenced or contract let and how requirement is met.
So
this is unconstitutional, so basically. So.
But the normal way we would do this, maybe not so much with a capital project, but with another, is we would reserve the funds in the e-board and we'd accomplish the same thing.
Yes.
Seems like there's no concerns with that proposal.
The next reference.
Excuse me, but so how do we. If without that, how do you handle expenditure limitations?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Then without that, if we deleted that 291336, how would you handle expenditure limitations?
Well, those would be handled through the budget, where we would put a limitation on the other funds of the agency by particular fund, but in general, overall for the agency, and that would be part of the budget documentation.
Seems to me
in the budget bill.
Seems to me that the e-board, like for instance, with some of the more poorly managed IT projects, have bled out money. You know, expended limited funding. Would this keep you from doing that?
No, this would not stop the emergency board from doing that. The board could still provide, under its four or five constitutional authorities, it could increase the limitation as far or as little as it wanted for an agency request still.
Okay.
Thank you. Moving on.
The next section, 291348, we have recommended an update to the reference to June 30th, 1966. The reference before you is that the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, with the assistance of the Secretary of State, shall as soon as possible after June 30th, 1966, ascertain the total general fund's revenue. We have replaced that language with June 30th of even-numbered year. And so the context would read June 30th of an even-numbered year shall ascertain the total general fund revenues obtained from all sources during the preceding fiscal year as far as practicable.
And this is another one where George and I messed with Paul's stuff, so he has to say okay with this one.
1966 was a very good year.
It was a very good year.
And I don't think it'll be missed in the statute.
Very good, thank you.
And then to Our next set is section 291-371, a salary plan review. There were several recommended changes within that particular section. The first one is 291-371 sub 2, change salary to compensation. So it's just a language change.
Mm-hmm.
The second one would be apply reporting requirements as defined in sub 4 to all agencies. It currently reads agencies within Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, and Department of Corrections shall report on biennial basis to legislative review agency. And we want that to apply to all agencies. So basically, we would delete the reference to those specific agencies.
Okay.
And then the third suggestion is 291-371 sub 5, and it would repeal all of the sub 5 and reference to transfer position authority.
The reason for that?
So this statute, sub 5, is a little unusual. I don't think we've ever seen this actually used, at least in my tenure, and probably Ken's as well. It actually gives the DAS director the authority, if there's vacant positions throughout state government, that he can, the DAS director and the governor can move that vacant position somewhere else to another agency. So literally crossing appropriation lines in order to move those positions around. We had listed it to be repealed because we don't know it's ever been used. Now, like we didn't check with Paul, I hadn't had a conversation with Michael Jordan before we looked at this one. And Michael would actually like to have a conversation about this statute. There's some things that they're doing now under the banner of improving state government operations where they're finding that they are trying to move or get some work done on an enterprise level that they might want to move positions around. And he just wants to have the dialogue about more than anything else. I know that as we've been trying to get our arms around IT projects, for example, the CIO's office has been creating these strategic technology officers who are in essence on loan from agencies right now into DAS. They're vacant positions that were in other agencies, and he's trying to move them into this agency. It's kind of a weird situation right now because
mm-hmm.
they're technically Department of Corrections employees or ODOT employees, and that gave pause to Mike when we saw this one being repealed. So we'd prefer to wait on this one. I would prefer to wait on this one until September so Michael can be part of the conversation on this one. So,
My position is that this gives this is a grant of authority to the executive branch that the legislative branch may want to reconsider.
Say again.
It's a grant of authority to the executive branch that we may want to think about.
The language clearly, I think existing language would allow them to transfer positions not only internally between agencies, but from agencies to agencies, correct?
Yeah, this allows from, you know, positions from ODOT to be moved to DHS, for example. Vacant positions,
I know the issue, very familiar with the issue with the IT. Kind of sympathetic to that issue, but it does seem like a broad grant of authority that
there is a reason that we have never used this statute, because we've tried to maintain those relationships on this. This is a big move, and that's why in my 18 or 19 years doing this, I've never seen it actually used.
Well, seemed to me that in the extreme, that we've been in this issue before, that when we have to cut, the governor has to cut across the board.
Yeah.
That he could theoretically cut across the board, then just move a whole bunch of positions and the authority for those positions to a different agency and actually not really cut up across the board.
So I'm not sure that this changes budgetary authority.
Yeah.
I don't read it actually changing budgetary authority, which you guys established.
You still have to be accounted for.
Yeah.
It still seems like a pretty broad grant of authority. Maybe we should consider its repeal.
I will consider it, but we'll give Mr. Jordan the ability to weigh in before finalizing the decision. And I'm sure you'll have a very entertaining conversation with him.
I'm sure it will.
Better.
Will this, with deleting this, have any effect on our current governor and previous governors' ability to reach out and grasp a employee from a particular department and pull them into his agency, to do work for him while he's being paid by the other agency?
So I don't think this statute, if an employee is if an employee is on loan, for example, the governor's office, this statute doesn't affect that. They're still technically an employee of that other agency, Department of Human Services or ODOT or wherever. This is literally taking that employee and making them an employee of the governor's office, which is what this statute
and the
provides
difference
for.
Is, oh, George.
Thank you, Senator. I will look forward to that discussion in September and Appendix 30.
And our last one, Mr. Chair, 291373, as relates to agency report to legislative committees of substantive program changes. There was a suggestion to add language to clarify the report is only required of substantive program changes, so that we don't have any particular language before you, but that would be some language added to that section. I would maybe defer to Ken and George as to what that would.
Well, this is a report that was required a few years ago, initially required for DAS to send a notification anytime they've, and it was developed during the budget, the big budget crisis period of time, and when there were changes being made because agencies didn't have the resources anymore. So it was, DAS was supposed to report on any changes that were being made that were substantively changing the way government operated by agency. And for many years, we got a report saying that George or his predecessor would have to fill out, and it said no changes were made. No changes were made this quarter. And then after a while, they decided, well, we're not even going to send that. So we haven't gotten one now for probably 6 years or so, I think, maybe. So we're suggesting that if there is a substantive change, and occasionally there are, that be reported. But if there is nothing in that quarter, that George doesn't have to go fill out a piece of paper to send it over to us, that I have to send to you guys that says nothing's happened.
And rules have already been adopted defining what constitutes.
Yes.
Okay, so.
DAS has rules that says exactly what a substantive program change is. Okay.
Any comments or concerns on that one? Very good. Well, Aaron, thank you very much for walking us through in preparation of the work with our colleagues here.
So, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the task force, we have just a couple more statutes to consider as it relates to some suggestions brought forward by Paul as in Chapter 293. There's just a couple of statutes there that we would like to review for September. In addition, in September, we will bring back, or our goal would be to bring back language to rework all the identified statutes today. We are looking at meeting September 16th, which is the second day of legislative days. It seemed that morning worked out well in terms of everybody's committee schedules and assignments, as the schedule has stayed very similar to May. We are looking at about 8:30 to 10:30 again, give or take a little bit of time, depending on how much work we have before us that morning. But I would ask that you block out that time for now, 8:30 to 10:30 on Tuesday, September 16th.
My staff loves it when I do this.
And like at that point, we will have the identified sections from 291 suggested language before you that day. So that would be our primary goal that day. And then we would look at a report being due at November 14th. So at that point, we will find a date between September and November to finalize our work and finalize our recommendations to the legislative body.
Very good. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Seeing
President? Just a busy work sort of question. Are we to expect a done today?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Jensen, you will have a finalized and updated spreadsheet. I will attach it to the one with all the suggestions from our previous meeting so you can see our work to date. It will omit, though, the suggested reworks, because we have not approved those today. So you will see a slightly modified spreadsheet and a slightly modified appendix with the suggestions and changes we have recommended today. Yes, you will. Absolutely.
Thank you. Great. Any other comments, questions, concerns? If not, thank you all for your time and work, and we're adjourned. If not, thank you all for your time and work, and we're adjourned.